Chapter 140. The debilitated cousin only hopes some fleur'll be executed. Sample. Thinks more interests wanted get man hanged present time than get man placed 10,000 a year. Hasn't a doubt. Sample far better hang wrong fleur than no fleur. You know life, you know, sir, says Mr. Bucket with a complimentary twinkle of his eye and crook of his finger, and you can confirm what I've mentioned to this lady. You don't want to be told that from information I have received I have gone to work. You're up to what a lady can't be expected to be up to. Lord! Especially in your elevated station of society, miss, says Mr. Bucket, quite reddening at another narrow escape from my dear. The officer, Volumnia, observes Sir Leicester, is faithful to his duty, and perfectly right. Mr. Bucket murmurs, glad to have the honor of your approbation, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet. In fact, Volumnia, proceeds Sir Leicester, it is not holding up a good model for imitation to ask the officer any such questions as you have put to him. He is the best judge of his own responsibility. He acts upon his responsibility. And it does not become us, who assist in making the laws, to impede or interfere with those who carry them into execution. Or, says Sir Leicester somewhat sternly, for Volumnia was going to cut in, before he had rounded his sentence, or who vindicate their outraged majesty. Volumnia with all humility explains that she had not merely the plea of curiosity to urge in common with the giddy youth of her sex in general, but that she is perfectly dying with regret and interest for the darling man whose loss they all deplore. Very well, Volumnia, returned Sir Leicester. Then you cannot be too discreet. Mr. Bucket takes the opportunity of a pause to be heard again. Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, I have no objections to telling this lady, with your leave and among ourselves, that I look upon the case as pretty well complete. It is a beautiful case, and what little is wanting to complete it, I expect to be able to supply in a few hours. I am very glad indeed to hear it, says Sir Leicester. Highly creditable to you. Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, returns Mr. Bucket very seriously, I hope it may at one and the same time do me credit and prove satisfactory to all. When I depict it as a beautiful case, you see, miss, Mr. Bucket goes on, glancing gravely at Sir Leicester, I mean from my point of view. As considered from other points of view, such cases will always involve more or less unpleasantness. Very strange things comes to our knowledge in families, miss. Bless your heart, what you would think to be phenomenons, quite. Volumnia, with her innocent little scream, supposes so. Aye, and even in genteel families, in high families, in great families, says Mr. Bucket, again gravely eyeing Sir Leicester aside. I have had the honor of being employed in high families before, and you have no idea come, I'll go so far, as to say, not even you have any idea, sir, this to the debilitated cousin, what games goes on. The cousin, who has been casting sofa pillows on his head, in a prostration of boredom yawns, vaily, being the used up for, very likely. Sir Leicester, deeming it time to dismiss the officer, here majestically interposes with the words, very good. Thank you, and also with a wave of his hand, implying not only that there is an end of the discourse, but that if high families fall into low habits they must take the consequences. You will not forget, officer, he adds with condescension, that I am at your disposal when you please. Mr. Bucket, still grave, inquires, if tomorrow morning, now, would suit, in case he should be as forward as he expects to be. Sir Leicester replies, all times are alike to me. Mr. Bucket makes his three bows, and is withdrawing when a forgotten point occurs to him. Might I ask, by the by, he says in a low voice, cautiously returning, who posted the reward bill on the staircase? I ordered it to be put up there, replies Sir Leicester. Would it be considered a liberty, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, if I was to ask you why? Not at all. I chose it as a conspicuous part of the house. I think it cannot be too prominently kept before the whole establishment. I wish my people to be impressed with the enormity of the crime, the determination to punish it, and the hopelessness of escape. At the same time, officer, if you in your better knowledge of the subject see any objection, Mr. Bucket sees none now. The bill having been put up, had better not be taken down. Repeating his three bows, he withdraws, closing the door on Volumnia's little scream, which is a preliminary to her remarking that that charmingly horrible person is a perfect blue chamber. In his fondness for society and his adaptability to all grades, Mr. Bucket is presently standing before the hall fire bright and warm on the early winter night admiring Mercury. Why, you're 6'2", I suppose, says Mr. Bucket. 3, says Mercury. Are you so much? But then, you see, you're broad in proportion, and don't look it. You're not one of the weak-legged ones, you ain't. Was you ever modeled now? Mr. Bucket asks, conveying the expression of an artist into the turn of his eye and head. Mercury never was modeled. Then you ought to be, you know, says Mr. Bucket. And a friend of mine, that you will hear of one day as a Royal Academy sculptor, would stand something handsome to make a drawing of your proportions for the marble. My lady's out, ain't she? Out to dinner. Goes out pretty well every day, don't she? Yes. Not to be wondered at, says Mr. Bucket. Such a fine woman as her, so handsome and so graceful and so elegant, is like a fresh lemon on a dinner table, ornamental wherever she goes. Was your father in the same way of life as yourself? Answer in the negative. Mine was, says Mr. Bucket. My father was first a page, then a footman, then a butler, then a steward, then an innkeeper. Lived universally respected, and died lamented. Said with his last breath that he considered service the most honorable part of his career, and so it was. I've a brother in service, and a brother-in-law. My lady a good temper? Mercury replies, as good as you can expect. Ah, says Mr. Bucket. A little spoiled? A little capricious? Lord, what can you anticipate when they're so handsome as that? And we like 'em all the better for it, don't we? Mercury, with his hands in the pockets of his bright peach blossom small clothes, stretches his symmetrical silk legs with the air of a man of gallantry, and can't deny it. Come the roll of wheels and a violent ringing at the bell. Talk of the angels, says Mr. Bucket. Here she is. The doors are thrown open, and she passes through the hall. Still very pale, she is dressed in slight mourning, and wears two beautiful bracelets. Either their beauty or the beauty of her arms is particularly attractive to Mr. Bucket. He looks at them with an eager eye, and rattles something in his pocket, halfpence perhaps. Noticing him at his distance, she turns an inquiring look on the other Mercury who has brought her home. Mr. Bucket, my lady. Mr. Bucket makes a leg and comes forward, passing his familiar demon over the region of his mouth. Are you waiting to see Sir Leicester? No, my lady, I've seen him. Have you anything to say to me? Not just at present, my lady. Have you made any new discoveries? A few, my lady. This is merely in passing. She scarcely makes a stop, and sweeps upstairs alone. Mr. Bucket, moving towards the staircase foot, watches her as she goes up the steps the old man came down to his grave. Past murderous groups of statuary repeated with their shadowy weapons on the wall, past the printed bill, which she looks at going by, out of view. She's a lovely woman too, she really is, says Mr. Bucket, coming back to Mercury. Don't look quite healthy though. Is not quite healthy, Mercury informs him. Suffers much from headaches. Really? That's a pity. Walking, Mr. Bucket would recommend for that. Well, she tries walking, Mercury rejoins. Walks sometimes for 2 hours, when she has them bad. By night too. Are you sure you're quite so much as 6'3"? Asks Mr. Bucket. Begging your pardon for interrupting you a moment? Not a doubt about it. You're so well put together, that I shouldn't have thought it. But the household troops, though considered fine men, are built so straggling. Walks by night, does she? When it's moonlight, though. Oh, yes. When it's moonlight. Of course. Oh, of course. Conversational and acquiescent on both sides. I suppose you ain't in the habit of walking yourself? Says Mr. Bucket. Not much time for it, I should say. Besides which, Mercury don't like it. Prefers carriage exercise. To be sure, says Mr. Bucket. That makes a difference. Now I think of it, says Mr. Bucket, warming his hands and looking pleasantly at the blaze, she went out walking the very night of this business. To be sure she did. I led her into the garden over the way. And left her there. Certainly you did. I saw you doing it. I didn't see you, says Mercury. I was rather in a hurry, returns Mr. Bucket, for I was going to visit a aunt of mine that lives at Chelsea next door, but due to the old original bun house 90-year-old the old lady is, a single woman, and got a little property. Yes, I chanced to be passing at the time. Let's see. What time might it be? It wasn't 10. 9:30. You're right. So it was. And if I don't deceive myself, my lady was muffled in a loose black mantle, with a deep fringe to it? Of course she was. Of course she was. Mr. Bucket must return to a little work he has to get on with upstairs, but he must shake hands with Mercury in acknowledgement of his agreeable conversation, and will he, this is all he asks, will he, when he has a leisure half hour, think of bestowing it on that Royal Academy sculptor, for the advantage of both parties? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.